Welcome to Outbeat Radio, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. As our guest tonight, we have Jill Rose and her nephew, Anthony. Jill is a pianist, vocalist, and songwriter, and we will get to hear one of her songs tonight. She started Camp It Up, the first LGBT family camp in the country, and ran it for 27 years. She played in women's bands in the 70s and 80s, wrote music for Linda Tillery and others, and taught music to K through 5 students in Oakland for 14 years. Welcome, Jill.
Hi, it's so nice to be here with you.
And Anthony Rose Strolik recently graduated high school, has been going through gender transition, and now is mentoring other trans kids. Anthony is biracial, Black and Mexican, and has two dads. He also is quite a musician. He's been playing music for about 10 years and plays 9 instruments. And he's recently started to write music with his very talented aunt, Jill. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
It's really a pleasure. I'm looking forward to talking with both of you. Stay tuned to learn more about Jill and Anthony. But first, here's news and events from our Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of July 4th, 2021. President Joe Biden signed House Resolution 49, a bill designating the site of the 2016 Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Florida, as a national memorial. Afterward, the president commemorated Pride Month with remarks alongside Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. He's the first publicly out person confirmed to a presidential cabinet position. Biden said at the ceremony, quote, just over 5 years ago, the Pulse nightclub, a place of acceptance and joy, became a place of unspeakable pain and loss and will never fully recover, but we will remember, end quote. He said the bill will enshrine in perpetuity a monument to the loss that occurred there, an absolute determination that we are going to deal with this every single solitary day to make sure we're not in a position to see this ever happen again. And the U.S. Supreme Court last week declined to hear a case in the case of Grimm versus Gloucester County School Board. The Supreme Court's decision not to hear the case upholds a lower court's decision supporting transgender and non-binary students' rights to use bathrooms and other facilities that match their gender identity. Both the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit ruled that the Gloucester County School Board in Virginia, where then high schooler Gavin Grimm was a student, violated Title IX and the Equal Protection Clause prohibiting Grimm from using the facilities as other boys at his school. The school made Grimm use a separate restroom. Grimm's case made it to the Supreme Court before in 2017, but the judges chose not to hear the case after the Trump administration withdrew the federal government's support of Grimm's case. Research from the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network shows 45% of transgender students are scared of using the restroom at school. The National Football League has come out in strong support of LGBTQ+ rights just a week after Las Vegas Raiders lineman Carl Nassib made sports history by becoming the first active player in the NFL to come out as a gay man. Nassib, who's 28, has played with the Raiders for 2 years and has been with the NFL for 6 years overall, including stints with the Cleveland Browns and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On the league's official Twitter page, the NFL tweeted, quote, "If you love this game, you are welcome here. Football is for all, football is for everyone, and the NFL stands behind the LGBT community today and every day," end quote. The NFL also released a brief video where it says, quote, "Football is gay, football is lesbian, football is queer, football is transgender," ending with, "Football is for everyone." The final frame of the video cites research that LGBTQ+ youth, with just one accepting adult in their life, have a 40% lower risk of attempting suicide. And here in California, 5 states, including Arkansas, Florida, Montana, North Dakota, and West Virginia, have been added to a list of 12 that the state will not pay for employees to travel on official business to because of anti-LGBTQ discrimination. Attorney General Bob Bonta announced last Monday that in the midst of unprecedented discrimination and bigotry in this country, transgender youth have become a particular target of discriminatory laws. He said a new law in North Dakota allows organizations and publicly funded schools to deny membership to LGBTQ students. And here in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Eagle in San Francisco finally reopened last week after being closed since March 13th of 2020. The beloved and iconic bar has only been opened twice on two occasions during the pandemic. It allowed itself to be used as a polling station during the 2020 presidential election, and it also prepared and gave away free Thanksgiving dinners last November. But thankfully, this last week, it'll be opening up and getting back to what it does best, offering an attitude-free location to dance, cruise, and hang out with like-minded friends. The venue is famed across the city and beyond as one of San Francisco's most enduring gay bars. It first opened back in 1981. The Eagle has been recommended to San Francisco for designation as a historical landmark. The city has already recognized two other LGBTQ venues, including the Twin Peaks Tavern at Castro and Market and the former lesbian bar Paper Dolls on Union Street. The San Francisco Eagle would be the first leather bar to receive such an honor. For a calendar of LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all the LGBT news headlines we're following, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moraglia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And as our guests tonight, we have Jill Rose and her nephew, Anthony. Thanks again for taking time out of your very busy schedules to join us tonight. Jill, thank you.
So happy to be here.
And yeah, and Anthony, thank you so much for being here, Anthony.
I'm glad to be here.
All right, so let's start with you, Jill. And can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? And I mean, we know that you did Camp It Up. Maybe you could talk to us just about how you go in life, like your passions, your hobbies, what you did for work before you retired, stuff like that. Just let us get to know you a little bit.
Okay. Well, I feel like my life is a lot about creating family and community. And I've done that in a variety of ways. We have an incredible family, which we'll come back to. They have a great, close family. Very connected with each other. And then for work, I've done community organizing and event production. I used to work on Festival at the Lake in Oakland. I've helped to organize women's music festivals. I have worked with old people for 20 years, and now I'm approaching there myself. I started teaching. I only taught in a public school for like 14 years, but I had taught music a lot before that, given piano lessons, voice lessons. I also I've been a songwriter, written by myself, written with other people, wrote with Mary Watkins for a while, which was a treasure. And I love that. Have a few songs that got out on the radio. That's exciting. And so I've done that. Lots of music. And teaching music is wonderful. I worked at a public school, Crocker Highlands, in Oakland, where they let me do this incredible, crazy curriculum. I taught American history through song, and the kids learned about unions and baseball and immigration. And I taught music from the Bay Area. The kids learned a lot of rock and roll. It was just a great fit, me and this school. I loved it. And I also started camp. It was, I think, 1989, and my sister and I were looking for a place to go on vacation. We were two working single moms, and we had three young little boys between us, and we wanted to go on vacation, and we didn't want to camp, too much work. We did end up camping. There were no gay resorts. Well, there were a few gay resorts anyway, but none would take us with children. So I said, okay, I got to do this. And my brother hooked me up with somebody who had kind of the same dream, and we started this camp. My partner, Ellie, my work partner, ended up leaving that camp about 5 years in, and I just ran it for a long time. And it's one of my great joys to have run this LGBT family camp and how many thousands of people have gone, and the staff, and the friendships, and the marriages, and the, it was just this joyful, amazing community, not without its challenges, of course. I just love that my work has been about doing that. I love bringing people I love together and watching them feel good and connect to each other. So that's a lot of what I've done. And then I retired in 2016 and moved up from Oakland to Santa Rosa.
Hmm. Well, wow. That's your life in a nutshell. Thank you. You know, we have friends. We've had friends for quite a while, and they always went to Camp It Up every summer. And we went, oh, Camp It Up. It's a family camp, a gay LGBT camp, family camp. It's like, oh, have fun. We didn't have kids, or we weren't interested or something. I don't know. But it's so weird that we would be meeting you, the person who designed it, who founded it, who ran it.
By the way, you don't have to have kids. All kinds of people came.
Oh.
All kinds of people came to camp. And that was one of the things I loved most about it. Not everybody was LGBT. Some were allies. Mm-hmm. I had been in lesbian relationships for many years, and I became an ally and was an ally for most of the years I ran that camp, actually.
Well, thank you for that. And there's so much other, you know, we could follow up later on, but let's get to know Anthony a little bit. So Anthony, share with us about more about yourself that you would like to share with us.
Well, I just graduated high school and I'm starting this new chapter in my life. They started doing these affinity groups for the high schoolers. They would get to mentor the elementary schoolers. And this was mostly for like people who weren't white or Caucasian. They were a minority. And then I was asked to run a group for kids who were trans because my principal thought that it would be something, you know, that I could enjoy and I would get into. And I've always worked well with younger kids, and I've been a counselor at camps before, and I've babysat neighbors and friends. And, you know, I love working with kids. And I think that everybody who knows me would say that kids love to be with me. And it was just a really fun and different experience. And I got a lot of leadership skills and experience from that. And now this summer, I'm actually going to be like one of the, like a co-counselor, me and one other person leading a group of trans kids at a trans summer camp. And I'm looking forward to that. I also do music. I've been playing music for 10 years. I was in jazz band, concert band, just recently started writing with Jill. And I think it's just because I grew up in a musical family, and we were always listening to music. Most of the songs that I know are because Jill taught me them, or she showed me them, or we listened to them together. And I remember anytime I was in the car with her, we sing together and, you know, try and harmonize or not harmonize, or just, you know, be in the moment listening to these songs. And that's one of the important things that I value about me and Jill's relationship.
That's powerful. And we're going to get right into your relationship in one bit. But I wanted to ask you, Anthony, for your principal to acknowledge you and to recognize you and to invite you to be this leader and teach other and be, you know, a group leader for these trans kids. I mean, I think that's impeccable. I mean, I think that's, you know what I mean? We don't hear much of that.
I don't think I had fully understood what a big part I played in these kids' lives. Because before when I did the group with the elementary schoolers, I was like the first older trans person that they ever knew or they ever met. And for me, the first trans kid that I met was when I was first transitioning in like eighth grade, the summer of eighth, going into ninth. And I think that if I had that experience, like knowing somebody who was like me, who was closer to my age, growing up that I would have a different experience. And I'm glad that I could mentor these kids and be some kind of mentor, bright light in their lives. And they're only like second to fourth graders. So, you know, that's really, really important.
Second to fourth graders. So can you just speak to that, Anthony? How could that have been different for you if you had the same experience you're offering to these young?
I think that I would have came out earlier. I didn't come out until summer of eighth grade. And it wasn't like I was a tomboy most of my life. And, you know, my family, they're, because of Camp It Up, I grew up in that like LGBT community, the loving space and the safe space. But I think that if I had someone who was like closer to me in age, that I would have been able to talk to them and, you know, shared, like they would have shared their experiences with me. And I would have been able to like say, hey, this is, you know, like I totally see what you've been through. And, you know, I feel like this, like you could have helped me be more myself when I was younger, because I've noticed that these kids that I'm mentoring, like their parents are emailing me saying like, oh my God, this is like, our kid is always talking about the circle. They love having you to look up to, you know, all these different things. And I'm like, this is, it's like so touching. And I don't think I've ever really experienced that before.
How many kids are in the group?
I think four.
And I'm curious, they're second to fourth grade.
Yeah, there's one second grader, two third graders, and one fourth grader.
Now, how did they come to be in this group? Who are they self-identifying and telling people, or are the adults suspecting? I mean,
they're fully trans, or there's one non-binary kid who's the fourth grader, but all of them, there's only one trans boy and the others are the two trans girls, and they all identify as trans. Or I think one of them is like me, who, you know, nobody really knows that they're trans except for their family and friends. Because they're perceived as who they, you know, who they see themselves in the world. And I think, well, when it started, these kids, they were all, or their parents, I think, they all had expressed, like, none of them knew each other before the group. So they had no idea who each other were, but their parents were like, is there some way to create one of these affinity groups for the trans kids or the people who aren't cis? And so that's, they, you know, they figured something out and then they looped me in, and that's how that started.
Sounds like you have a very supportive parent community and staff community. That's terrific.
Yeah, totally.
Jill, we're wondering, when Anthony started his transition, or before he started his transition, how was it for you as his aunt?
It's a big question. Well, I have to preface it by saying that in my family, we have boys. Everybody has boys. And so when we had a girl, we were just ecstatic. In fact, when Anthony was a baby and a toddler, I took care of the kids a lot. But I would get him, my friend Barbara would come over, and we would get him every Friday. And he'd come over and they'd put him in pants, my brother and Ron, and we'd put him in a little dress because we loved shopping for him. And and it was fine. So I think, you know, we just all wanted to be sure that he was making the right decision for him. And thinking, God, can we trust this? He's so young, you know, what people think. And then my brother is married to Ron. And so one of them would think, and Anthony really wanted to start taking testosterone, and one of them would be okay with it and the other one not so much, even though they went to gender spectrum conferences and we all could kind of see what was happening, and wanted him to be happy, but it's still, there's still that little tug. Is this the right thing? What if he regrets it? Those kinds of things. And then my brother had this epiphany one day that he might never get completely comfortable with it. And that didn't mean that Anthony should be denied growing up in the body that he felt was real for him. And so the testosterone started. And as soon as it started, it's like we were all just joyous, really.
Including Anthony?
Yeah. And I remember when, like, so this is my family, great family, or we have such a good family. So, like, when he had his name change, his legal name change, we all went to court. There was like 15 of us or 20 of us. And then we all went out for lunch. That's our family.
Everybody showed up. We had a whole party. It was like a whole thing.
So, yeah. And we just want him to be happy. And I almost never say she anymore. And I almost never say Aviva, your previous name. It took a little while, but no, I'm thrilled, but it was a little jolting and jarring at first, but look what we got. We got a happy kid.
That's right. I was talking to a friend who's probably in their 80s, and they were telling me that they couldn't understand a child so young to make a decision like this, and that they felt uncomfortable. And I said, why do you feel uncomfortable? And they said, well, it's a hard life. And I said, well, we all have hard lives. What would be hardest is not to be able to live authentically.
Right.
And they kind of went, oh. And it doesn't really matter that I don't understand or someone else doesn't understand, because it's your life, AJ, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry. That's what people always said. Like, I remember when I first came out to my mother, she said, oh, your life is going to be so hard. No, that was about her. That wasn't about me. But that's what people say when people come out to their families and whoever all the time. Oh, you're choosing a much harder life. No, I'm not. You know, but that's what people say. And then that's magnified when you're trans, when you declare that this is who I am and I'm going to do this. I have found that just being a part of it also makes it, well, I just love it. Like when Anthony had his top surgery, I got to be there, you know, not in the room, but I got to be there when he came home to take care of him. And oh, it just feels so right to me. It feels so right. And it's been such an honor to be part of whatever process he wants to share with me. And I think everybody in the family feels like that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Jill. Touching. Anthony, so when your aunt was talking, you were smiling, and especially when all the 15 people came and when you had your top surgery. If you could just share with the listeners how that felt, you know, to have that so much support and for them to finally, you know, your dad to listen and to say, hey, okay, I have to do this. This is what Anthony wants.
Yeah, well, when I did this thing for the mentor group, and I wrote like a letter of introduction to all the parents. And in the letter, I said, I remember this specific moment where I had been going to like a gender therapist, and there was like one of the last sessions, she wanted my dad's to come in with me and be there for that. And I told my dad's how I felt, or I said something like, I'm trans, or, you know, like I feel this way. And Ron was like, okay, you know, like he jumped on the train, he was on board. But Avi, he was like kind of skeptical. He was like, well, I don't think you're trans. I think you're just you. Like, you're not boy, you're not girl, you're just you. And that for me, I was like kind of hurt, because, you know, he didn't really see or hear what I was saying. But over time, he slowly got on board. He was okay with it. And he was actually the one who was there at my surgery. He took me there and drove me home. And I think like the first year after coming out and identifying as Anthony, whenever he was mad at me, he would call me Aviva instead of Anthony. And that was even more hurtful, because I thought, like, to me, it seemed like it was intentional. Like, he was purposely telling me that he wasn't okay with who I am. But like it's been like 4 or 5 years now, and I don't remember the last time he called me a viva, which is, you know, like every trans kid's dream is to be called the name that they want and the pronouns that they want. And that was just super important. And when I had my name changed, I was nervous, of course, even though it's, you know, just like a mark on the passport or, you know, whatever. But when I got my driver's license, it had my correct name and my right gender marker, and I was super happy. But to have all that support that day, and like we took up like one corner of that courtroom, and you know, it was like, it was almost like a graduation, or, you know, like everybody was there to support me, everybody was so happy for me. And it was just because my family's so big and so loving, it was just great to know that I had that support and so much of it.
In the song that we wrote, the last part is, you know, that talks about people who don't have that kind of support. And when you think about it, honey, I mean, it's not been, you know, a cakewalk for you.
Right.
And you have support. You have a lot of love around you and support. So, you know, when you think about people who don't have that, it just, oh, it's heart-wrenching. Also, honey, when you were talking, I was remembering when I was thinking about, you know, how happy we were when this all really started rolling along. There were times before that happened that were so painful, and more for you, but for those of us who love you, like when you went to Glenview and you didn't know which bathroom to go into.
I decided not to go to the bathroom at all. I would go before I left the house and when I came home.
And so he wouldn't go to the bathroom all day. It tore my heart out because he wasn't comfortable in either bathroom. People would say something. And so that doesn't happen anymore. That's just one thing, but it was, yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you wrote a song, so why don't we talk about the song a little bit, and then we'll break for the song.
Okay.
What's the song called, and how did you come to write it?
Do you want me to start, sweetheart, or do you want to?
Well, I can start. It's called Becoming More, and it is about my transition and also, like, the love and support that I've had like this whole journey. And when we wrote it, we were kind of like, just, we came together and we were like, let's write a song. So we didn't have, like, we didn't know we were going to write a song about my transition until it happened. But we sat down at the table and Jill had her computer and she was just listening to, well, I was just telling her everything that I'd gone through, and she would type it down, and then she would start to form it into like lyrical phrases. And then we sat at the piano and just kind of wrote and talked and wrote and sang, and you know, it blossomed into this great song, and I'm very proud of it.
And after we wrote it, I think we knew we were on to something. I've written just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs. This has got to be way up there with my favorites. It's a little Broadway-esque and a little not. Anyway, after we wrote it, a couple weeks later, my birthday's in December, and I've always wanted to have a summer birthday. I was going to be 70. So I declared my birthday. This was 2019. Yeah, I declared my birthday in the summer, and the whole family got together. They came from New York. They came from everywhere. And we had a big summer weekend birthday. And Anthony and I unveiled the song. And we sang it. People cried. I cried. I still, when I'm sitting on the piano bench with him next to me and I just look at him, yeah, it just, I feel it. And so we got a lot of good feedback there. And then it was camp time a couple weeks after that. And so we sang it to the staff and they loved it and said, oh, let's have this be our camp song this year. And then the campers loved it. And it was so amazing because Anthony can be a very private person. And it was the first night when the campers were there and we were both on stage to do the song. And Anthony told his story in front of hundreds of people. And some of them have known him all through his whole life because he grew up in camp from when he was a baby. It just meant a lot to so many people. And anyway, we kind of loved the song. So I got involved with Ner Shalom when I moved up here. And I mentioned to Suzanne Shanbaum, I said, well, maybe we could record this song. Oh, I played it for her way back when, for Suzanne, last year sometime or whenever, before the pandemic. So I asked her, can we record it? And at first I was just going to record it. And then it became clear that Anthony should be there also. First, he was just going to be there to kind of be a part of it and watch, but it became clear that he should be a part of the singing and the speaking. And truth be told, my voice is nothing like what it used to be when I was younger. I'm really glad to sing it with Anthony. And so we got to work with Suzanne, who I love. I love working with her. And Anthony loved her too. She misheard his name, Anthony Jonathan. So the whole time she kept calling him Mr. Johnson. And we finally said, wait a minute, it's not Mr. Johnson. But anyway, so now we just call him Mr. Johnson.
It's so funny. She even put it in the, like when she was about to record a track, like of me singing, she would put in the track title, Mr. Johnson Singing, instead of Anthony singing.
Because she's funny like that.
That's funny. So yeah, won't you tell us the name of the song? We could play the song, then we could talk more about the song when we return.
Okay, the song is called Becoming More.
All right, everyone. Well, let's just take a listen to this glorious song, Becoming More, and we'll be back right after.
Forward motion, inner knowing, becoming more of who I am is how I keep on growing. I remember feeling different, that the labels didn't fit. Wasn't boy or girl or pink or blue, nothing was quite it. And I wasn't sure that there could be space that felt like me. So I tried on different feelings, took a wait and see. And I learned to listen closely to the voice that was my guide. And more it told me I didn't need to hide. So I found my faith and said out loud, this is what is true. And I hope that those who loved me would say, go on, be you. Forward motion, inner knowing, becoming more of who you are is how you keep on growing. Becoming you, holding on to what is true, staying strong, keeping on, becoming more.
I look back to where I came from and honor where I've been. The most important step you take is the one when you begin. And as my body changes, a mirror of my soul, I know it's all been worth it to feel this strong and whole.
And I cry for those whose journey has been painful and too lonely. It's hard to feel you're crazy, so we're the one and only. And I thank my friends and family for the love you have shown. My body now, it's spirit, this is what I own. Forward motion, inner knowing, becoming more.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diane and Sheridan, and we have in studio Jill and Anthony, and you just heard a song called Becoming More that Jill and Anthony wrote together, and it was fabulous, just a fabulous song. And we want to know more about the process and how you came up with the words and the melody. And AJ started telling us a little bit about it, but what else can you share with us, Jill?
Well, you know how, as a writer, Diane, I know you're a writer too, not a songwriter, but you know how sometimes it's like it pours out of you. And sometimes you have to work it. Even if it pours out of you, you still have to rework it. But once we kind of got going, it started kind of pouring out. It came pretty easily. We wrote most of the first half of it together, and then I went home and wrote some more, and then we would go back and forth and back and forth, but you know how sometimes as a writer, you write a line and you think, ooh, did I write that line? I really like that line.
And yes.
Right. So I like this line. The most important step you take is the one when you begin. And, you know, I just think, as I think about you, honey, how true that is, even though it was from that first knowing, but it was when you stated, this is who I am. And then there's the part in the last verse, my body now in spirit, this is what I own. And I love that too. That's a powerful line for me.
Very powerful.
What about you, AJ? Is there a particular line in the song that really strikes you and that you love?
I mean, I love the whole song in general. I don't think I can like pinpoint a certain lyric or a line or anything, but it was just like the experience of writing with Jill, because we've always, you know, I've showed her my songs before. They're nowhere near as good as hers, but
oh, honey,
there, you know, this was like where it was one song that I was like completely like 100% proud of. And just the fact that I got to write it with you, Jill, was, you know, I think the best part of this experience.
I got to help when we all lived in Oakland, very close to each other. In fact, when you were a toddler, we lived around the corner from each other. So right. I had these kids. AJ has a brother, Oren, who's 13 months older. So I got to take them a lot. And I mean, what a gift to me. Ooh, how wonderful. And, you know, it's just been amazing to watch them each blossom and become who they are. And I think it's, you know, with anybody you love, but especially with kids and grandkids, and in this case, my nephews who feel like my own kids, part of the joy is the surprise that you don't get to control it and you don't really want to. You want them to be who they are. My brother and Ron do this blessing every Shabbat that they've always done with the kids. Every Friday night, they put their hands on their heads, right?
Top of the head, yeah.
Okay, and say, be who you are and be blessed in all that you are. And I just love that. It's so simple. But that's the joy. That's the gift. Just letting it be and, you know, watching it happen, being a witness, a supportive witness, hopefully. But
that's amazing that your dads did that for you and your siblings. Mm-hmm. Jeez, mm-hmm. If every kid could have that in their lives, wouldn't that be something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love your family. I feel the love. I feel the connection. And even when things are not clear or understandable, you still hang in there together and be a family. That's really powerful.
Yeah, we're not without our share of dysfunction, of course. We are a family, but we're fiercely committed to each other. You know, all the kids, the grandkids, the nieces, the nephews, and not everybody, you know, is related by blood. Clearly, we have some related by blood, some by adoption, some by, you know, like I have my sister daughter, Anna, who grew up in my camp, who's now a mother. She's my daughter by love. And I love that our family is big like that. And there's always room for more. So
and diverse.
Yes, that's wonderful.
So there's a couple of things I want to ask Anthony about you being a singer. I know that you play all types of instruments, but you're a singer as well. And that's, I want to mention that. And then also I'm talking about the diversity in your family, Jill, knowing that Anthony, that you're Mexican and Black, so you're culturally different. Has that played a part, big part in your family structure?
I mean, my dads are both white, Jewish, and gay. So, you know, it was definitely, I haven't had the typical like Black Mexican upbringing, but I am still in contact with my birth family and they're down in LA. But growing up, it was definitely different. Besides being like one of the only girls in my class, or like like in my group of friends, I just felt more comfortable with the boys because I felt like one of them. And I didn't realize until like middle school that most of my friends were white. And I think that was because of my dad's and my family, but it also is different because my brother, Oren, he's 13 months older, he's 19, and most of his friends were black. So it was like really different for me than it was for him. And I still am not sure how that happened because we went to the same schools, we live in the same house, we have the same family, except we have different dads. But it was just like such a weird thing for me to think about that I leaned more towards having friends who were white, or like I think I had a few Mexican or Asian friends, but mostly white kids that I hung out with. And then my brother was completely different. He had all of his friends were mostly black kids. And I still don't understand if that was because of who he associated himself with or how my dad's affected him and his friendship.
I mean, I think it was also a school issue a bit, because he did go to Skyline for a bit. I mean, he did go to, some of his school experiences were different.
But he had black friends
before that, yeah.
Before high school, yeah. But it was just totally like a different experience.
Anthony, how did your bio family receive you after you came out?
Well, my grandma, she knew that I was not straight. She thought I was definitely something other than straight. So when my dad told her, she was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But when we usually, like for the past 5 or 6 years, we've been going down to LA for Christmas because they celebrate Christmas and we do Shabbat here. And so when we go down there, that the family, they call me Anthony or AJ because my middle name is Jonathan, but they used she, her pronouns. And that was like a little hard for me to understand at first. And then I realized that because they're not seeing me every day, like my family here in Oakland, it's kind of like a separation. But eventually, like this last 2 years, they have started calling me by he, him, or Miko. That's what my grandma calls me. And it just, I don't know, it made me feel better now that they can truly understand who I am and call me by the right name and pronouns.
Yeah, it takes patience. It's habitual, right? That habit, you got that habit. I have to stop myself sometimes too with friends. It's like, no, he, you know, kind of thing. So yeah, that's great that they... Yeah.
Diana, can I speak to the issue of having Black and Mexican kids in our family?
Yes.
For a second. So I have to say, many amazing things have happened in my life. That's one of the best, to have this incredible opportunity to be family, close up, help to raise kids who are not white. It's, you know, it kind of blows the roof off your mind and your heart. And I mean, I just feel so fortunate that I have that blessing in my life to have my head spun around and be educated, you know, which unfortunately people of color always have to do for white people. But it's really, I think about the world differently because they're in my life and I think of them as my children. And I know I still miss a lot because I walk through the world with white skin and I'm an old lady. But it's been, I'm just grateful. I am just grateful. And I know that might sound like some liberal nonsense, but I mean it deeply.
It's all good.
we've had 33 foster kids in our years together, and many of them were not white. And so we totally understand where you're coming from. Well, maybe not totally, but we do understand. Or should I say, I understand because I'm white as well.
The rainbow is beautiful, right?
But you're in this relationship with each other. So you have So Sheridan, for you as a white woman, you know, you have had this experience that, you know, you get this window to the world that you wouldn't have. I mean, you're not, you don't have the skin, but you have some view that's rare for white people to have.
Right. It's like you say, an honor, and it's quite an education and quite a rare opportunity, I think, for a lot of Caucasian people to mm-hmm. have extended family that are not like me.
And I'm just curious about Anthony and this topic that we're talking about. Have you been educating your aunt a lot on the race card, on the race thing? Dealing with racial stuff.
I mean, there hasn't really been any like you shouldn't say this, or like maybe, you know, like see it this way kind of thing. But she's definitely woke. She knows, like, whenever something unfortunate or bad happens in the African American community, she knows about it. She's aware of it, and she feels for everybody in the community. And I think that's, you know, something that is good to, like, that the fact that you're aware of things, Jill, as a white person, is definitely good.
Yeah, I don't know how you would survive in a family where that wasn't true. But, you know, there's still that privilege issue, and that is what it is. That's a tough one. But I feel like it's my responsibility to be, as you say, as woke as possible. And I welcome all feedback from Oren and AJ, for sure.
So how is it living with two fathers? So you have two fathers who are gay and white and Jewish. So how is that?
Well, it's definitely different. In middle school, well, I think it started in elementary school. Sometimes I would, you know, like I would show up with one of my dads, and they'd be kind of like, you know, giving those like, whoa, who is that guy? They're also like older, like a lot older. Like some people would ask me if that was like my grandpa or something. And that was definitely like a little weird, but I think just they're wise people. And the fact that they have gone through different things, being white and Jewish and gay, has definitely, you know, they've educated me on, you know, like, just, I don't think I can like pick a scenario of what has happened, but like they're informative, and they, not only about like what it's like what it might be for me being a black kid with white parents, but me and my brother, they've sat us down before and like showed us this video, like what to do when you get pulled over, when the police, like when you get an altercation with, or like when you come across a police officer, and they're just like, be careful, you know, make sure they can see your hands at all times, make sure you're polite, and that, you know, you don't do anything, like just be aware and careful so that, you know, nothing bad or unfortunate happens, because clearly that has been something happening for a really long time, and it's just not okay. And for me, I feel like I haven't really had like a typical black experience, like being black in America, because I have never had the only interaction, I've never had a negative interaction with the police. And I think that usually black kids, they want to live past 18. They've been through so many things being black, especially being a black male, that, you know, makes them afraid that they might not hit their 18th birthday. And I'm just so fortunate that I was able to do that. And even like when I transitioned, I had to go into life thinking like, okay, now people are going to see me as a black male instead of a black female. And that was definitely like something I didn't realize was super important in my transition. And I'm just thankful that I have the supportive people in my life and the love that I do, because I'm glad that I have made it past my 18th birthday, and I hope to see more.
Mm-hmm. That's really important what you just said, Anthony, about your parents showing you this video about the possibility, right, of what happens in Black lives. And you not having that experience when you're younger, or even having to know about all that, did that scare you somehow? I mean, what did that do to you to know that this is a possibility for you? I mean, because, you know, like me, we knew this when I was growing up. We knew, but you grew up in a white family, right?
Yeah.
So it was totally different. I'm just curious about, what did that do to you?
It made me more nervous to, like, when I first started driving, I was more on edge. And every time, I mean, like, sometimes I'll go like above the speed limit, but whenever I see a cop, I always put my hands on the wheel. I sit like I push the seat up, like, so I'm sitting up straight, and I make sure that, like, I'm either at the speed limit or under it, because, like, you never know who decides to, you know, pull you over or not. And it was just, it definitely a different experience, because I just, something about the fact that most Black kids have to grow up like at a, like, almost like from the day that they're born, they know that they could be pulled over just for the color of their skin or the way they look. And I knew that in a sense, but it wasn't until like middle school kind of that I was like more aware of that. And I'm just thankful that I am aware now, and that I've had people have taught me things that I can use in my life to make sure that I'm aware, and I can do anything that I can to make sure that I get home safe every day.
Thank you for that, because that's really powerful, and I appreciate your dads for doing something like that, because some white families who adopt cross-culturally feel like their kids are protected,
right,
in that system, but they got to go out into the world, and that's the reality. It's unfortunate, clearly.
Yeah,
that's the reality. So thank you for that. Jill, you want?
Honey, when you went up to Fred and I had this funky cabin up in the foothills, and Anthony went up by himself, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, and it is a very conservative place. And you brought the dog and you were going to go out for walks, you know, up the hill. And I remember thinking, just be safe, because I never see a Black person walking on those streets or whatever roads. They're not really busy streets, but yeah, it's just, you know, I get nervous because you never know how crazy white people are going to react.
Well, this is all important. This is about Anthony's life and the journey.
Yeah.
So, but there's all this positive. All this positive, making music, graduating. Congratulations on your graduation, and just being authentic and being yourself.
Thank you.
So is there anything else you want the listeners to know before we close tonight? Is there any, let's think about words of wisdom. Anthony, for example, what would you say to other people? What do you want other people to know? What advice can you give them to help their lives maybe be easier?
I would say that no matter what anybody else thinks, it's okay to be 100%. You are like your authentic self. And even, you know, like a lot of people go through different things, but if you stay true to yourself, you'll be okay. And I think that is important for everybody to know.
And it takes a lot of courage, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
That's the word that's coming up for me about you. You said you started your transition in eighth grade, which is about what, 12, 13, 14?
Yeah, I can't remember. It's been a few years. Mm-hmm.
And so you're 18 now. So let's just say it's been 6 years. I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. And then before that, you said that you were a tomboy. And for you to come to this conclusion and for you to share it and not keep it to yourself, and then for your family to embrace you and for you to put it out, your school obviously knows because they asked you to be a leader in the affinity group.
The teachers know, but like only the students that I've told and the people who knew me before high school. That was the whole point of me coming out or like transitioning when I did. It was because I didn't want to transition while I was already in middle school, because I thought people would have a hard time seeing me as Anthony instead of like a tomboy that I was. And so I decided to like, I actually wanted to move to a whole new state just to get a fresh start. But then I like the next best thing was to start high school as Anthony and enter as male. And that's what I did. And I'm actually really glad that I did that.
Wow. Mm. Well, congratulations. That's quite a story. You give a lot of people strength.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hey, Jill, what do you want people to know?
About this one, about Anthony?
About anything you'd like to impress your wisdom on to people.
Oh, it's for me, it's all about going through life with my heart as open as I can keep it and seeing that humanity in everybody and being kind, kindness, just basic kindness is so important, and just reaching in for that love in each person. And
beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's what it's all about.
Is there any words of wisdom you can say to parents or relatives? Because the way you embrace Anthony was just amazing.
Enjoy it. They have to be just who they are, and your job is to help that happen however you can and to enjoy it. Celebrate it, because they're going to be who they are, and how much better and more loving to do that with an open heart, and an open mind.
Well, we want to thank you both so, so much for being on our show tonight and sharing your beautiful selves and your souls and your music. Jill, if anybody wanted to get in touch with you regarding your music, how could they do that?
Should I give you my email?
Sure.
All right. It's Jill S, as in Susan, Jill S Rose @gmail.com.
All right, everybody. So if you want to get in touch with Jill regarding her music, or maybe you could even, if you want to talk to Anthony, you could go through Jill and she could navigate that for you. So we want to thank everybody so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Both of you, Jill and Anthony.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you. What a pleasure. And what a great thing for the two of us to do together. It's another real bonding experience. Is that too corny, AJ?
No.
Okay. He's used to me being corny.
Love it.
Well, we want everyone to remember, like Jill and Anthony, you too can be living proof that through sharing your craft, your wisdom, your passion, your experience, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.